It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. It's been a cold spring here. The ice still out there on the lake. But the pelicans have arrived and other migrating birds have come in anyway, which gives us some faith that something else is going to happen soon. Otherwise, why would they? Our teenagers are migrating as well, as they're sort of planning on it anyway. They don't know where they're going to migrate to, but they're feeling that kind of restlessness, and they're going through a feeding period, and they're driving around in their cars up and down Main Street, and they're getting ready to go somewhere. It's a painful process for us, exhilarating for them to get away. It started back when they were 11 or 12 years old, that first time that your child didn't want to sit by you at a public event. And there you were at the church dinner, and they wanted to go off and sit at a table with other people their age, and it drove a nail into your heart. But it's the course of things. It's the inevitable course of things to take off, especially at this time of year, after this long, grim time. The milk truck got stuck in Mr. Hoppy's driveway here the other day. That's how desperate it is. He's always turned around in that driveway, though Mr. Hoppy does not have dairy cows, but the milk truck is always turned around there. But he got stuck in the mud there in the driveway where Mr. Hoppy had let the hose run for hours. He backed into it, and then he got stuck, and Mr. Hoppy came running out with a fresh cup of coffee and some caramel rolls. And the driver sat down and had a conversation with him. And that was enough for Mr. Hoppy. It was a social moment. And then he got out his Farmall tractor and he helped pull him out of there. It's how desperate we get this time of year. It's a tough time for marriage. We don't believe in divorce in Lake Wobegon, but if it were going to happen, it would happen this time of year. People get married on a burst of enthusiasm after a period of dancing and dining and courting each other. And it's like going off on a long round-the-world boat trip on a very small boat with somebody you just met the day before. Sometimes you don't always apply the right criteria. Carl Krebsbach has been building a big summer house down by the lake for a stockbroker from Minneapolis, a man named Latterman, who wanted an enormous house. Carl fought for the man's wife, and then he went into a divorce, and now Carl is stuck with it because the man's money is all tied up in the divorce negotiations, and so Carl can't get money for it. He's had to mortgage his own house in order to pay for this big soaking tub going into a house that's enormous, two-story living room and big pitched roof and open beams and a fireplace that's big enough to roast a mountain goat and a shower that's big enough for three people, which may be where the divorce started from. Raises questions in a person's mind. As I say, we don't approve of it in Lake Wobegon, but we would understand it if it were to happen between two people who just found that they couldn't get along. If you can bake caramel rolls, then you can get over those tough parts of a marriage. Or if you can fix the plumbing, you could get over that, the rough passages. But if you can't do either one, then a sort of sense of doom settles. And you just sort of wait for it to go off the tracks. Sort of like the Wobegon Whippets, you know, when they're leading by two runs, the top of the eighth inning. You wait for that inevitable bonehead play that will start the whole series of bonehead plays that will result in defeat. There's a sense of inevitability about it somehow. Which one will be the one to do it, to come running in on a high pop fly and overrun the thing, and then he suddenly lurches backward and throws his arms up in the air, and it lands untouched in the grass. And then that leads to the next, and that leads to the next. We look for that in marriage as well. My cousin Barbara married to Lloyd for all of those years, and they seemed to get along pretty well. But when that first big argument hit them, after about 10 years of quietude, it just tipped their boat over because they weren't prepared for it. This is why older couples like to have one ritual argument that you have every few months, you see. And you get it out of your system. It's a preventative argument. It's like setting a fire to stop a fire, you see. Myrtle and Florin Krebsbach have an argument like this, and they always have it about this time of year and a couple of other times as well. And it starts out with her saying, "Why don't we ever go anyplace?" And he says, "Not go anyplace? Why, we took a vacation just this last summer." And she says, "You call that someplace? South Dakota. I mean, go someplace I want to go." And then he says, "Well, there's no pleasing you no matter where we would go. I've been trying to make you happy all of my life, and I'm no closer now than when I started." She says, "All I want is just to go someplace and not just sit around like a bump on a log, but travel while we're still young enough to enjoy it." And he says, "All we would do if we took a trip would be just argue. Why should I pay good money to be miserable someplace else when I can be miserable right here at home?" And she says, "You're just impossible. There's no point in arguing with you." And then he says, "Fight, fight, fight. That's all we ever do." And they sort of play it out a little bit. And they do this every few months. It's a ritual argument. Last year, he made a mistake. And when she said, "I don't know why we don't ever go anyplace," he said, "Well, where do you want to go?" And kind of set her back on her heels. He said, "Just tell me where you want to go and we'll go." And she said, "Florida." So they went to Florida. They were there for 2 weeks. It was paradise. Sunny skies, and the beach, and it was beautiful. It about drove them crazy. They didn't talk to each other for 2 weeks. What was there to talk about? And so they got in their car and they came home. And as they drove north, they could feel the cold winds of winter and they could feel the cold, freezing rain of April. And it gladdened their hearts. They were back on familiar ground once again. I grew up among cautious people who warned us against extravagance. Cautious people who sat at the table and said, "I don't understand why you kids walk out of a room and you can't even turn off a light. You leave a light burning. Nobody's in there at all, and I just have to go around this house and turn off lights one after the other. You think money grows on trees or something? What do you think we are, Hollywood stars or what? When you get up to leave a room, reach over and turn off the light. Don't have the sense that God gave geese. Wind up in a poorhouse. We're going to wind up in a poorhouse someday." Those are my people. And it's to get away from them that I come to New York City. And you can pay $4 for a cup of coffee. You can hear them gasp. All these ghosts in your head. You can walk into a men's store on Madison Avenue, a store that's so exclusive that there's a doorman there to open the door for you and to make sure that you're not from the Midwest. And if he thinks that you're from the Midwest, he'll say, hey, you're not in here. Go down, go over to Queens. Go to Sears, go to Kmart. But you walk in there and this beautiful woman in a black suit walks up and greets you and takes all your clothes off. You just take all of your clothes off. They don't care. And two men lift you up by your arms. They put their hands under your arms and they lift you up and they pull your pants on. Don't even pull your pants on yourself. And the tailors come out, 6-7 tailors, and they make this beautiful suit, which is expensive. It could feed a lot of people for a month, except that nobody can eat wool. And so it's just one of those adventurous experiences where you pay an enormous amount of money for something and remember it forever. Adventure, bravery. You go off to Paris, although you can't really afford it. You get on a boat and you go to Europe and you go through New York Harbor and under the Verrazano, and you remember that forever. That bridge passing over your head and your last sight of land, and off you go to an adventure you can ill afford, but which you should be grateful for. Because life is unfair. Life does not always reward the Lake Wobegon virtues of diligence and loyalty and hard work and thrift. Life can come crashing down on people, good people. And when it does, you want to have beautiful memories somehow. When life comes crashing down on you and suddenly you find yourself lying on the ground and you can't believe it. It's you. You're not that old. But they pick you up and put you on the gurney and they pull a sheet over you and they take you off, and it's not to the hospital. It's to a mortuary. Wait a minute. Hey, come on. And people you never liked whatsoever strip your clothes off you, and they cut your wrists and your ankle, and they pump chemicals in you that taste really bad. They're awful. And they put a suit on you that you used to wear to other people's funerals and you were planning on wearing some more. And now they put you in a box and they take you up to the Lutheran church, just not far from where you used to sit. And somebody you barely know preaches a sermon about something you don't care about, and people stand up and they give testimonials to things that you did that never really happened. And then they pick you up and they carry you out to this, my gosh, it's a hearse. And they slip you in, and you were planning on taking a lot more car trips. You wanted to go back to the Rockies again. You want to go back out west again. You want to go drive across the South and see Memphis and see Tupelo again and see Columbus, Georgia, but you're not going to do it now. You just got one short ride left, and up to the hill you go, and they set you down on this brass rail, and you're up there, and they sing Children of the Heavenly Father, but without much feeling. And nobody throws themselves onto your coffin, weeping and shouting, no, Daddy, don't go. Nobody does. They just sit there whimpering and sniffing like they have a bad cold or something. And then they're all gone and they leave you there, except for members of the cemetery committee. And they stand not far away and they talk about drainage problems. And now you've got one more thing to worry about. And then the gravediggers come and one of them knocks on the lid of your coffin and saying, here's that you sold me that Ford. Worst car I ever had. Serves him right. He can't stay dead long enough for me, I tell you. And they crank you down. Whoa, you go, wham. And then the lid comes wham down on top of you. And then you lie there for what seems like a long time. You say, God, I'm ready now. I'm ready now for the land where we'll never grow old, you know, where there are no tears or none of that. And then you realize that to God, 1,000 years is like a second. You got a long time to wait. It's good then to have memories of Paris, to remember that trip, to have all these things to go over in your own mind. Life is a gift. Life is terribly unfair. And that's what makes it all the more beautiful. Every day, adventure, bravery. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are bigger.